All right. Are we ready to get started? Okay, so this is a big room, and I like to, have interaction with people in the audience, and I can only see you four guys, so you're probably going to get the brunt of it. I'm really sorry about that. Oh, that's a little better. So we're here to talk about progressive web apps. And I'm going to ask a question. Please be honest. How many of you have heard of progressive web apps? Okay, now how many of you have heard of progressive web apps before you read the title of this session? Okay, about half the hands. That's good. And you know what? That's where we are as a web development community today. Progressive web apps is a new idea. We're still figuring out exactly what it means. But in essence, progressive web apps is a marketing term. It's a term that we're using to explain where we want to go with the app space in the web. Now, not all web pages are going to turn into progressive web apps, but I do think that we have the potential for the web to be the biggest app catalog in the world. It already has all of the features, all of the brands, all the functionality that we need today out there. We are looking for ways to make it even more usable for the users of the web. So the term progressive itself, let's start and talk about what that means for us. Because progressive is a term we've been using in the web for some time with progressive enhancement. And when we talk about progressive enhancement, we talk about a particular way to build a website or a web app where instead of providing one version of a site for certain users and then providing a smaller or less functional version of that site for people with slower or older devices, progressive has us layering our functionality when it's available. The idea is that everybody gets the functionality that they need, and then as your user agent, which might be a device, it might be a browser, it might be a desktop computer, as your user agent has more features that it can support, then your app will start taking advantage of those. And the idea is that everybody gets a great experience then. Now, when we talk about progressive web apps, we're really looking at three key technologies that work together here. All right, so the W3C manifest is one of them. And that's the idea that we have one manifest to rule them all. Today, if you're building apps, web apps, for different platforms, you're going to have one manifest for Chrome. You're going to have one manifest for Firefox. You're going to have a different manifest for Windows 10. And you, as a developer, have to know all the different quirks between them and maintain these different manifests. W3C manifest will give us one manifest. It'll be JSON-based. We'll write to that and not worry about anything else. The second component we're going to talk about today is service workers. Service workers is itself a group of really cool functionality that allows us to have websites that run offline and in the background and have a web worker that can run independently of our page, which means even if someone isn't visiting our site, they can still run that worker. And the third thing is the app container. And this has to do with the experience the user will have with the web app to make sure that it works as they would expect from apps, to make sure that they have functionality like being able to install it once and not have to reinstall it over and over again, uninstall it, be able to have its own managed memory, and all those things that apps need to be able to function. So we're going to jump right in and start talking about service workers. And I'm going to break this down to the key components. There's other APIs and there's other specs that kind of bleed into this. So I apologize for not covering everything, but we only have 45 minutes today. So I want to kind of touch on the things that are important and that we can kind of get started with today. So the first thing is promises. So promises is an ES6 type feature where you can, instead of relying on event listeners, which by the way, events are still a really powerful part of JavaScript, we don't think we need to get rid of events. Love them, but events aren't always the best way to construct our code. So having promises lets us link our code together so that we can say, once this is done, then do something else. And that's what we kind of have in this code sample here. I have a new promise, and the promise is either going to resolve or reject. So it's either going to say, yes, this worked, or no, it didn't work. And by the way, this error, it broke. I'm trying to get this standardized across all Microsoft products, so we only have one error to worry about. But nobody seems to want to back me on that. So maybe tweet it out, get some energy behind that. But the idea is that we have a promise, and the promise is going to either be waiting to resolve, it's going to already be resolved, or it's going to be resolving in the positive or the negative. Now, a promise, when it can return, we call that a function that can return a promise, we call it thenable, right? Because it can then do something else. So you can take any function and put a promise as a return and make it thenable. Some of the methods that we have out there, especially in the service worker space, is thenable on its own. So, and I'm going to show you an example of this along with fetch in a minute. But fetch is another really cool API that lets you go and grab stuff from the web. And you may be thinking, we already have APIs that go and grab stuff from the web. But this one is different. It's better, okay? Because I don't have to think about what I'm grabbing. I can just go grab stuff. I'm going to go fetch an image. You fetch an HTML page. You fetch a JSON object. And then when it comes back, you can decide what to do with it. You may say, well, it's a JSON object, so I'm going to do this with my JSON objects. It's an image, so I'm going to do this with my images. All right, so it's really powerful, and it gives a lot of control over what happens with those fetches. One of the great things about fetch is that when you get it back, you don't just get the response body handed to you, you get the whole response. So you can actually look at the headers, and you can make decisions on what you want to do with it based on that. Let's look at how fetch works today. Now, as I go through some samples, I'm going to be using a site that is a demo site that I put together called Southridge Video. And it's going to be the next big thing. I think it's huge. We're all going to be using it pretty soon. What it does is it lets you browse through videos. It lets you play videos.
Like beating up bullies.
This is me, by the way.
You got any tots?
Yeah. And what's really special about Southridge Video is no matter what video you try to play,
like beating up bullies,
I'm always going to play the video that you want to see.
You got any tots?
Yeah.
That's the power of fetch. You'll see what I mean. So it's a responsive web app, so you can change the size, and it's going to work with the different screen sizes, and it's going to adjust to the different layouts. It works with touch. It works cross-browser. These are all features of a web app that you want to make sure that you have before you work on the progressive web app, okay? You need to make sure that it's working on all the different platforms. We're going to start out, though, and we're going to look at a page. All right. Oh, man, I think I just gave away the surprise from caching. Okay. That was supposed to be the big ending. And it should be a blank page. Let's close that. Okay. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with a page where I am doing a query selector to get my image, all right? So it's just an image tag right now. And I'm going to go and I'm going to fetch the image for it. Okay, so here it is. Can you see this? Let me make it bigger. All right, so here's my image tag. The source is empty, and I have a pointer to it here. So the first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to fetch the image that I want. All right, so I'm going to fetch it, And then I'm going to refetch the page and watch what happens. Nothing. Okay? But in the background, what's happening? Let's look at our network here. When I refresh this page, is I am getting that image. Okay? So fetch has went and grabbed the image for me, but it doesn't do anything with it yet. We need to tell it what we want to do with the image. So we're going to use a promise here, and we're going to do a dot then, and then we're going to put a function inside of it, and it's going to have a response, and then that is going to return this response and the blob that comes back with it, because that's how our responses work. All right, then, see how this is working? Then I'm going to, when the blob returns, I'm going to do something else with it. And this is going to be the image data that returns. Okay? So the image data we're going to do URL create object URL and take the image data, and then we're going to do my image source and set it to that. Of course, in JavaScript, spelling matters. At least you have to consistently spell it wrong, right? Okay. And I must have not consistently spelled something right. There we go. Okay? And I know what you're thinking at this point. You're thinking, that's a lot of code to put a image on the source when you can just go and put it on the source tag, right? So if I actually go back and do this instead, I'm going to get the same result. Okay, so now you're wondering, what's so special about fetch if I can do it in less code today? Okay, let me show you what's so special about fetch. And to do this, I'm actually going to add a service worker to this page. Now, normally I would be a good developer and I would do a feature detection to make sure that service workers worked, and then I would put it in here inside of that feature detection, which I promise I will do later on. But after I know that it's there, I'm going to do a Navigator Service Worker register, and I'm going to register this JavaScript file as the web worker that becomes my service worker, okay? And then I'm going to set the scope. And at this point, I'm just going to set the scope to the whole domain. You can say just like, you know, my folder slash app, you know, my domain slash app, this is going to be the domain of the service worker. But in this case, I'm going to use the widest one possible, which is the entire domain. And then I'm going to do a console log that says the service worker has been registered and show the registration and stuff like that. Okay, so now for service workers, I'm going to open Chrome, give them props where it's due. They have the best service worker implementation out there today. So let's look at what happens. Show my tooling here. Okay, and I see I have that registration object. Okay, now let's go look and see what is happening inside the service worker. All right, when I open up the service worker, the file called testsw.js, all I'm doing is attaching to an event for fetch. All right, and then I'm going to reload the page here. Make sure it should be registered. Oh, I know what I need to do. And one of the things you'll notice as I go through this is there's a lot of new technology here, okay? So there's some things that are easier and harder to do than other. What I'm doing here is I'm opening up my Service Worker internals and unregistering manually the last one that I did, okay? So now I'm gonna refresh it, and you'll see what I have here. That console log comes up and says yay for fetch. Now look at the code though, because I'm not using fetch. I'm just loading it through JavaScript. It could be the same as if I'm using an image tag. See, the key to fetch is that it doesn't matter if it is using fetch to make that. Every time we make a request, we get a fetch event. And that means every time that we get a fetch event, we can stop and we can make a decision on to what we want to do with that fetch request. All right, so I'm going to show you in a minute. We're going to get that fetch event that fires. Instead of firing a console.log here, instead I'm going to go and add that response to my cache and then return it. Then the next time that I come, I'm going to look at my cache and see if I already have it there. And if I do, I'll return it from my cache instead of from the server. So now we have an environment where fetch is allowing us to be able to control and almost act as a proxy for the traffic that we're coming into our web app. And we can decide that we want to source it locally, we want to pull it from the server. Maybe I even want to, instead of returning this wonderful, cute image of boys peeing in the street, I might want to show a different image that says, you know, no image available, or you don't have the rights, or whatever mean thing I want to do instead of showing this image. All right, so it gives you a lot of control over that. Now, fetch gives you that ability no matter how you load the files. This is going to include your images, your XHR, even your HTML pages. Now, Service Worker is already registered for this page, so it's even in control of the HTML that loads. All right. So that's fetch. It's a beautiful thing, it's very handy, and it's going to kind of become the one of the most important parts of the Service Worker that we're going to use today. So the next thing that we have is notifications, and notifications become important with Service Worker because Service Workers are can run independently of our HTML page. The experience that we have on the web today is our users are looking at our page when it's loaded in the browser. When it's not loaded in the browser, we don't have any way to reach them. Okay, so notifications can be fired two different ways. It can be fired on a page, so we can say, like in the top, or excuse me, the bottom here, we can say a new notification and just fire this notification, and it'll give the little toast message that pops out and tells your user something. That's fantastic. That's kind of, we can do that with alerts, we can do that with on-screen type of experiences, but it is good to standardize it in one location. The other way is to let a Service Worker push that notification out. And if you look at the top, the first thing I'm doing is checking to make sure that I have notification permission, because that's something I'm going to ask up front and say, hey, can I push to you this notification? And that's a really good thing for us to do. Well, first of all, you have to do it to be able to enable this for it to not error. But as a user, you can imagine how important that will be. Today in the mobile space, we may have 10, 15, 20 apps, and they all want to push us notifications whenever they want. And it gets kind of annoying. The more apps you have, the more notifications you have, and the less you trust notifications. So you can imagine if you have 10 apps on your phone, but you visit 200 web pages a week, imagine if all 200 of those web pages were pushing notifications to us. That would be really annoying. Everyone would hate us, and you know, they'd stop using the web. We don't want that. So we're going to ask them for permission. They can tell us whether they want this website, this web app, to give them notifications or not. So the Service Worker can then do it off of self, which means it doesn't have to have the page open to do it. The last one that we're gonna talk about today is the cache API. Now, cache is different than the browser cache. All right, but it kind of can work in conjunction with the browser cache. Your browser cache today is really controlled by the user. They can clear it when they want. When they go to other web pages, they're going to fill up their cache with other people's stuff, and your stuff is going to be pushed out. And that's all great. Cache API is your cache as a developer. You control what goes into it. So you're going to have cache. The first thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to name my cache. And I'm going to say this is my page dependencies. So I called it dependencies.cache. And then you're going to list what files you want to put in there. And you can put a whole group of them in at once. Or you can put them in one at a time whenever you make fetch requests for it. The key is that you decide when things go into the cache. And you decide when things come out of the cache. All right, that's all programmatic. Now, cache is actually very special because it doesn't just cache the resource itself. It caches the entire request. So when I put jQuery.js into my cache, it's not just putting the content that came back from that request, it's putting the whole request in there. So when I pull it back, it looks just like the request that came from the server. So if I'm looking at the headers, they're going to be there. If I'm going to be looking at the request body, it's going to be there, okay? Because it's going to look just like it came from the server. And it's going to be identified by the URL. So as long as it's the same URL, it's going to be the same response that's inside of your cache. All right, let's take a minute and kind of explore what this looks like here. All right, I'm going to go back to my main page here. All right, and let's look through the code first at what we're doing here. All right, the first step that I want to do to utilize service workers is I actually want to register it. So this is what I'm doing at the beginning of the page here. The first thing I do is I'm saying if navigator.serviceworker exist. Okay, this is very key functionality. We started off talking about progressive. So in this sense, I don't want to expect that people need to have service workers enabled to use my app. If you do, then it's not a progressive web app, right? Because it has to have this that functionality present even if service workers aren't there. So we're using service workers to enhance the experience on our page. So I'm checking to see if it's there, and if it is, the first thing I'm doing is I'm requesting notifications. This only has to happen once. Okay, you request it. If they say yes, then you have that permission cache for that domain, and you don't have to ask them again, which is why you're not going to see it pop up for my browser here. The second thing I'm going to do is register the service worker. This happens just like the last one I showed you. It's a registration. This service worker's name is uniquely service-worker.js. And then what I'm going to do is console log when the registration begins. And then I have one other event here that's on controller change. Okay, and I'm going to show you where this is fired later. But what I'm doing here is I'm saying on controller change, if it's a state change that is equal to active, I know that my service worker is done. So then I'm going to fire an alert on the screen, because I love alerts, you may go offline. Okay, so that's simply telling me service worker is ready. It's attached to this page and it's running. So let's look at this service worker. All right, starting at the top, the first thing I'm doing is identifying my cache. I'm going to say, okay, this is the cache. I'm going to put my files. I'm then going to identify the files in my web app. So why am I doing this? Because I want to stick all the files in there ahead of time. I don't want to have to wait until they're loaded from the page. Because what I can do is fetch can go out and pull those files in all at once, stick them at the cache, and in many times, the cache will be full before the page is done loading because it's not going through all those execution steps, and I'm able to start pulling from the cache before the page is even done loading. Okay, so I'm going to put all those files in ahead of time and say these are all added to my cache. Then on the install event, and this is important, install event is the service worker install. So this an event is what happens once whenever I add a service worker. I add a service worker to the page and it doesn't install. So not every time does it run, does it install, just the first time when it's installing. This is something I don't want to run every time. I just want to run the first time. So I'm going to wait until that happens, and then I'm going to open my cache with my cache name. And then I'm going to add all to the cache. When that happens, I'm going to add all my required files. This was that array of files up there. And then when that is done, I'm going to return and say skip waiting. So just keep going forward, and you'll see why in a sec. The next thing that I'm going to do is the fetch event. All right? And fetch event, like we saw on the other page, fires every time that a request happens. So going forward, every time that my page makes a request, I'm going to wait for that event, and then I'm going to respond to that event with one of two things. Either the cache matches what the request is, so it matches, it means I already have that file in the cache. If I do have that file, then I respond with that file. Okay, so what's happening here is instead of letting the request go to the server to pull that file, I pull it right from the cache if I have it. Okay, if, and then I also, if I have that cache, I'm going to fire this console log. All right, and this is just going to say I'm returning from the service worker cache. That's for me and you to be able to see when files come from cache versus when they're pulled from the server. Okay, now, if I don't have that, all right, so if that condition, all I do is return the fetch event, which means I go ahead and let fetch happen, and then when it comes back, I return what it gets back, AKA I'm pulling it from the server. All right, so what I'm doing here is every time I get a request, I look at my cache. If I have it, I return it from the cache. If I don't, I just let it go and proceed and pull it from the server. The next thing that I have here is the activate for the add event listener, okay? So, sorry, the add event listener for activate. This is the service worker activate, which is why it's on self here for the service worker. So that event is going to fire, and that's what goes and talks to my page and says, yeah, the lifecycle event is done, it's ready to go. Okay, so that's where I'm getting the alert that gets fired on the page. Now, we're going to come back and talk about message in a minute here. But let's go back and see what has happened. I loaded my page the first time, and I got the message that says I can go offline now because I have my service worker registered. Okay. Now notice that it did not pull from the cache because the fetch did not fire any of those console logs. Let's reload it and see what happens. It looks a little different this time. One of the things is it's super fast, right? It loads in like no time. In fact, it actually takes longer to unload the page than it does to reload the page. Now, I'm also firing all these console logs because these are the fetches that are returned from the cache. They're the same URL that I was going out and requesting. And it's just pulling them from the cache instead of pulling them from the server. So what this means is I now am able to run offline because I don't need my server on. Let me go ahead and stop my server so you can see. That happens if you do a hard refresh. Oh, come on. Okay, let's try that one more time. Load it up from the cache, stop it, then reload. There we go. See, service workers is still a work in progress. There's things that don't always work. But now I'm returning it from the cache, so I'm running offline the same way. Now, one of the great things about this is I didn't have to change the way that I built my page. I'm not using fetch for all my requests or anything like that. They're just simply going out and calling those images just like I would on a normal page. This is based on React, and I tell you that so you think I'm cool because I write with React, but it's just a normal web page. It's made to work in a browser. It's going to work with your browser, whether it has service workers or not. Now, there's one other thing that I added in here.
Like beating up bullies.
In a bully.
All right. Let me go through here and clear my cache. Which I'm going to do by deleting it, okay? And then I'm going to, let's just do this. So we're starting from scratch here, okay? It's pulling from fetch. Now I'm going to go,
like beating up bullies.
And you'll see I have a link here that says save this video for offline, all right? What this is doing is it's saying I'm going to click on this link, and then it's going to make that call for the video. And oh, I didn't do it fast enough. The idea is that this is downloading that video so that it can be watched offline. Now, it doesn't matter if I download it with fetch, like I'm doing here, or whether it happens from playing the video. It's the same request. So it's going to go into my cache. Then when I'm offline, I can now play this. And what I've done is I changed the message here so that it says the video is available offline instead of saying download this video for offline. Okay? Now that happened in the background, and you saw the... You saw that message pop up, the toast notification that said it was done. So this is where we're doing that. I actually have another method set up with a return in it so that, or with a promise in it so that I can use this as promises. But I'm basically attaching to this message, and I'm using post message to talk back and forth between my service worker and my page itself. All right, and so I'm passing back the information so that it knows when I'm downloading the video and it's done. I'm going to go ahead and show that notification. Now, this is bad. Don't set an 8-second timeout on your code, but it downloads really fast. The internet is fast here, so I set an 8-second response there for me to be able to have time to navigate to a new page, which I didn't do in time, but it was for dramatic effect, okay? So you wouldn't normally set that, but it pops a notification there. And then I just use the post message to talk back to my page and tell it exactly what's happening. So there we have it. We have a service worker that can work independently. It gives us the ability to run in the background, and it gives us the ability to do things offline. So now we're talking. Now this is power. Let's move on to the manifest. The manifest is basically a signal that we use to describe our web app. It signals that it's an app. So when there's a manifest on your page, you're kind of signaling that this is a web app. It's not just a standard web page. And it contains all the information, the metadata about your app. It's going to have the name. It's going to have the URL that you want to start with. It's going to say what orientation it should be shown in, how it should be displayed, the images that you want to use, the scope of your application, when it starts and when it ends. And these are all really important things, okay? Because instead of having to do this multiple times, the W3C manifest will be one manifest that works across all the browsers. So we have one of those attached to our site here as well. And the W3C manifest, I'm going to use it in the next step because it's what I'm using to signal that it's an app and that I'm going to then go and turn it into an app with my app container. All right, but it's a very important part because this today isn't standardized and we need it to be. The last thing that we're going to look at here is the app container. Okay, and the app container works specifically with the W3C manifest to create an environment where your website can turn into a web app. Okay, so it's going to do a number of things for us, and this is what's going to enable some things like running in the background and giving the user an ability to do an install and an uninstall. Now, I showed you how Chrome was the farthest ahead in the service worker space. I'm not shy to say that what we're doing in Windows 10 is far ahead of where Chrome is in the app container space. Okay, let me show you what I mean. So today, if I am in my app here for Windows, I'm going to go ahead and add this app to my screen, do the install. So, I'm going to add it to my desktop. Okay. And then you're going to see, see, it's pulling the name from my manifest. Go on to the desktop. It's pulling the image from my manifest. So those are all really good things. So now when I click on it, it's going to open it up in Chrome, okay? Because Chrome is the runtime for the application. It's part of the app container for it. Now, the thing that's not so great about this is that Chrome needs to be running for this to happen. So if I look at the task manager, I don't see Southridge Video. I see Chrome running here. The other thing is if I go and look here and see it in my app list, which is good. I want to see it in my app list. I can do things like uninstall. And instead of uninstalling the Southridge Video, it's going to have me uninstall Chrome. And I can't help but tell this joke. I think that's a really great idea. I think all of you as developers should uninstall Chrome. It'll be perfect. So it's not quite the app container that we want yet. But I know that they're working on it, and it's going to be amazing when it's done. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to use a tool that I unapologetically work on called Manifold.js, which is a command line tool that we use to build the app containers. Because what we're doing with web apps is we're turning them into UWP applications, which means that they're going to be Windows Store apps that run on all the different Windows devices. Okay, so the app container turns it into a store app that will run on your Xbox. Okay, it's going to run on a HoloLens. It's going to run on the PCs and the phones and everything, which is another reason why you need to make sure that it has touch. You need to make sure that it works with the different screen sizes. And one of the things that we also do that we think we hear a lot from developers that it's important is give you access to the Windows APIs. Okay, so we reflect them all into JavaScript, and if you go into your DOM and you do a window.windows, that's us, okay? So all of our APIs are inside of there. Sorry, our name is Windows, so it's just how it worked out. So what I want to do, in the Manifold.js actually will create these apps, and we call them hosted web apps. Google came up with the name Progressive Web Apps, but don't worry, we're working together to make sure we're moving in the same direction. We create the hosted web apps. We'll give you a runtime for all the different platforms, not just for Windows. But I want to show you what this looks like here. So for this, I'm going to actually go to the live version of the site, which I have running on Azure. So Southridge.azurewebsites.net, and grab the URL, and then I am going to run here. Now, normally I can do it for all the different platforms. Actually, let me go into a better folder. Now, I can do it for all the different platforms, but in this case, for time's sake, I'm just going to do Windows 10. And then I'm going to turn the debug so that you can see everything go by. It looks really cool. This is going to go out to the server, and it's going to look for the W3C manifest. When it finds it, it's going to collect all the information, pointers to the different tiles and stuff like that, and it's going to package it into our Windows 10 web app. Okay? It'll do it for Chrome. It'll do it for Firefox, too. It'll do it for iOS and Android. So when I go into my folder here, I'll have my Windows 10 folder. And then I'm going to run the app, and it's actually going to install it on my system here. The other thing we do is we'll give you source code. So if you want to open it up in Visual Studio and deploy it onto a phone, you can do that and use the really great tooling inside of Visual Studio for debugging. But this package, as I mentioned before, it's a UWP. So you can take the content, you can drop it onto an Xbox, and it's just going to work. Okay, so this is that same application. I have the same video that everybody wants to see right up front here. The package itself, though, is going to give us a real great experience for users. All right, because if I go and look at my task manager, now I see the Southridge app running there. okay? Which means that I'm controlling the memory from the OS level. I'm deciding what cycle that app is in, whether it's live, whether it's background. I'm controlling whether it is getting ready to be suspended or whether it's suspended, and we give you events for all of that inside of your app so that you can act accordingly. It's managed so it has its own sandbox. It's given unlimited storage. Of course, physical disk space is the actual limit there, but we'll give that to you. And then if I go and do things like uninstall and install, I actually get the experience that I would expect as a user. If I have notifications, I can turn them off in the settings and those type of things that users expect from their apps. So now we have a web app that is running like a store app. And you as a web developer didn't have to do anything different. I didn't change my app to make it run that way. It's a standard web app providing that same great experience I do other places. To the user, it's just running as a store app. They don't need to know that it is a web app. To them, it's just an app. So now you can submit it to the store, you can reach more users, you can get analytics from your store data and all that great stuff. That's where we're going here. So imagine a world, and right now I'm showing you how each of the different platforms have strengths in these different areas. Okay, so we have the service workers, we have the W3C manifest, and then we have the app container. In a progressive world, you can start using each of these today on the platforms that they really work on. Okay, so don't wait for service workers to be supported everywhere to start using it. You can start using it today to augment experience for users who have service workers. You feature detect and you know if it's there, then you do that. The same thing for a Windows app. If you're using those Windows APIs, you simply do a feature detection and say if window.windows, then I know that I'm inside of this Windows Store app and I can use those APIs. You can start doing that today, and then as we converge into an experience that's the same across all browsers, your app just keeps getting better and better for each of those platforms. So you ask, are progressive web apps ready today? Different browsers are at different places, okay? And you can start using them where they are today. I encourage you to do that. Some information for you to get moving in the right direction. If you want to learn more about progressive web apps, go to Google's site listed on the screen there for progressive web apps. To learn more about hosted web apps, go to the Windows site about hosted web apps. The tool that I use to create the packages is Manifold.js. More information about developing for Windows, dev.windows.com, and a tool I didn't have a chance to talk about, but is really important when you start moving into app spaces is Vorlon.js. So check that out, because once you move into the app spaces, sometimes you lose some of those F12 tools that we have today. Vorlon gives you a consistent tool base that you can use across all the different environments. If you're running one of these apps on a TV, you're probably not going to have really great dev tooling there. Am I wrong? You have no dev tooling there, so you can actually plug Vorlon.js into your site and use that dev tooling in those environments. So even though we didn't talk about it, it's a good thing for you to go and check out. We're kind of out of time for questions, but I'm going to be around here for the next few minutes, so if you have any, bring them my way, and thank you so much for your time today.